It's R&B Talks time. Except we don't have a B today. Brian's out for an emergency thingy. So, if thought it was a good idea to introduce Robert. Robbie, here. Has been my... I've known Robbie for quite a while.
42 years. Yeah. Crazy how that works, right?
I come from the same womb. What happened?
Yeah, when your brothers, you end up knowing each other a long time. It'd be weird if we didn't, right? I mean, I guess it wouldn't be that weird. There's families like that.
So, Robbie's going to be helping with production. He has already. And we'll hopefully be having a little... Robbie will be kind of the third wheel, as it were. And a outer voice to the Reggie and Brian chaos that occurs.
Oddly enough, I've been a third wheel a lot. Before I got married, I was always the third wheel. It's like...
So, all right, let me ask you this, Robbie. Because, I mean, the whole as you already know, R&B Talks is like... It's kind of an interesting collaboration of ideas that come about. Like, we talk about politics, we talk about Christian stuff, we talk about philosophical stuff, we talk about all kinds of stuff, right?
Right, right.
So let's just run down here. So as far as what, okay, I'll ask it this way. What do you feel about the current political spectrum in the United States of America?
It's awful. I mean, what is there to think about it? You got a bunch of greedy, power hungry people in office on, doesn't matter what political party they say they are. They're all in there for themselves. Like, I think they're proving it. There might be the occasional one who's actually showing up and doing their job. But what was it I saw? There was another podcast I was listening to, and Mark Ruffalo was on it. And you know, he's very left. Right? And I don't agree with a lot of his stances on things. But he was talking about wanting to create like some policies and stuff to help with certain things. I don't even remember what they were. But I remember he got in contact with the senator. And he got really frustrated, and I kind of loved what he had to say, because he started talking about, you know, he finally got a hold of the senator, and the senator was like, I can't help you. And he's like, well, isn't this the kind of stuff senators are supposed to do? And the senator straight up told him, I spend 75% of my time trying to campaign for money so I can run again. Which means 25% of the time he's doing his job, if... Right. But that's assuming that of the 25% that's left, that he's focusing 100% on being a senator. And he's probably not, because as you can see, the attendance levels are not exactly the greatest.
That's what Brian brought this up as well back. I forgot what episode it was we were talking about. And he said the same thing. And I don't think it was Mark Ruffalo, though. Of course,
there's been many people who have said that.
Yeah.
That's how much time. But it just, the Mark Ruffalo one stuck out as the most recent one I heard.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, when you have, and we've said this too, when career politicians, that's what they're for, is their career is politicking, which means their whole thing is keep staying in office. And their income is based on what happens outside of, you know, the government purview to allow certain stuff to happen. There was a push I read about not too long about trading. You can't trade stocks or something while you're in office and stuff like that. Kind of,
especially when your policies directly influence.
Yeah,
those numbers are going to be.
Well, you know, but I guess where we're at, and this is why I asked you this question, because like a lot of people would probably say, well, Reggie and Brian are very Republican, but really it's not
about... I see you more as libertarian.
Well, it's really not about but I think this, we've had conversations before, Rowdy, and the ideas about parties really don't line up with anything we really believe. Like, as a Christian yourself, we align with what Christ spoke of. That's really what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's not Republican. Sometimes that's not Democrat. Sometimes it's nothing. It's just whatever. But so I guess where I was going with this is like, you see how the CIA and the FBI have been like pretty much politicized at this point and used for political gain, including even making global changes. Like the CIA has conducted, I don't know how many, you know, government changes over the freaking last few decades, but yeah, it's a circus, right? And so what I don't like when it comes to like talking about it is just because it doesn't matter right now in 2024, if you say something, it doesn't really matter if it's true or not. If it doesn't follow a certain party line, it's vilified, right? So I guess here what we're trying to do, and I think you would agree, is it's just like it doesn't really matter what villainization happens. We just want to speak the truth as much as we know it.
Yeah, it's always interesting because that's not politics. Politics is about speaking what people want to hear, and that's you can see that right now, right? So both candidates running for president have. On many things that you're talking about now, in the past, have said many things the exact opposite. But yet now, they're saying simply what aligns with the party because they're trying to get those votes. And that's always frustrating with politics to me because it's just a bunch of people trying to keep their jobs. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, how much different do you think your coworkers would react in their like yearly reviews if you told them that their yearly review was being voted on whether they get to keep their job by all of their peers?
Correct. Right? Correct.
How much different would they act? Right. Cause you wouldn't get people's personalities. You wouldn't get it. Cause they would all put a front because all of a sudden your life and everything, it relies on somebody else voting you in. And that's what the frustrating part about politics always is. And that's kind of why the politicians that get in office who aren't career politicians usually tend to be more middle. Trump is an exception. Trump actually, I think, is more middle because he was a Democrat. Then he kind of became a Republican. And he does say a lot of Democratic things sometimes. But whether you like him or not, you know, totally beside the point. But so, yeah, I mean, truth, we all say we want it. But only if it aligns with what we feel the truth is.
Yeah, I think the current political candidates are a little mind numbing. Except I will say though, the Trump's reaction to his assassination attempt was, to me, very telling of his character. So, like, if you come up, you get shot. I mean, now take it for what it was. It was he freaking took his part of his chunk of his ear off. So, I mean, come on. Bleeding everywhere, he gets up and says something instead of being afraid and run off the stage.
Oh, well, I mean, everybody knows Trump. I think, see, the thing is I wasn't shocked by that because I think Trump is very much a loud.
Blowhard.
Actually, I was going to say blowhard. That changed my mind. But he's a very loud, a very, very opinionated, and he's not afraid of anybody's opinions. You know what I mean? Like you can watch anything he's been on, anything he's interviewed on, and you can tell he is a person who does not give a crap at all about what anybody else thinks about him.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that doesn't to me, that's not somebody that would, especially when you get the adrenaline going through, it probably didn't even hurt at first. You know, oftentimes gunshots don't hurt when you first get them. Because you don't even know you're in shock.
Yeah,
your body's in shock. Yeah. You got so much adrenaline. Yeah. Stuff like that. So it's not surprising to me that he would do that. It fits with his character.
Yeah, so for me that was just like an indication of like regardless of how bolsterous and like out front Trump's attitude and stuff is, at least he's got, well, I guess the best word's moxie, right? To be able to, you know. Because if you think about it, here's my view, right? Who do I want to negotiate with the world leaders like China, North Korea, Putin, you know, any of these, Saudi Arabia, Iran, the Israeli conflict, Hezbollah? Who do I want in the middle of all that? It's certainly not a vice president who can't, it bumbles her way and is very much a puppet behind, you know, from everything else.
You dealt with the person who nobody even remembered was the vice president until she started running for president.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because she never made an appearance. And now all of a sudden she's at the border and she's here and she's part of this and she's sending aid to these places. And you're just kind of like, what were you doing the past 3.5, okay, almost 4 years?
Speaking of aid, Robbie, like, what do you think about this whole thing where, oh, let's give everybody a check for $750.
Well, I mean, I've read deeper into that, and that's just a preliminary. It's supposed to be just a preliminary, like, go buy toothpaste, underwear. That's not like the only benefit you get, but that's kind of been sensationalized a little bit. It does seem like a stupid low number, right?
Yes, yes.
But when you go read up on what it actually is, that's the. Okay, right off the bat, we're not even checking anything. You tell us you're in need. Here's $750. Go buy some food. We know that doesn't go very far, right? We know that's bullshit numbers. But it's been since, and that's the biggest problem I have with anything. There's everybody nowadays tries to put a little bit of truth.
Oh God.
With this much sensationalism, right?
Oh yeah.
And then they try to smear this all over that. To say, hey, this is, you should listen to us. We're telling you the truth, right? And that's just media right now. That's the news. That's every news outlet. Every single one of them.
Yeah, we talked about, we did a whole episode on propaganda.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this is, right? And so, like, yeah, that is stupid. What bothers me more is that we're going to pledge $100 million to the help and rebuild, but then we're going to give $157 million overseas.
Dude,
right?
Don't get me started on that, man.
I know.
On the hundreds of millions aid that have been going to like the Taliban, mm, and like the freaking Ukraine stuff, and then to the FEMA's money being allocated to I mean, it's just, look, it's insane how little foresight we've had into taking care of our own people.
Yeah, I'd like to see the numbers on the FEMA. You're talking about the immigration stuff.
Well, yeah, I'm saying
I'd like to see the numbers on it, because FEMA's claiming they haven't put any, but then there's interviews from a few years ago where they talked about FEMA's there to help them, right?
Yes.
So there's always that, like, you said you're going to help them, but now you're saying you haven't helped them?
Yeah.
So which one's worse, promising help and not doing it? Or, you know, giving away money for immigrants. You know, it's like, and I get it. I'm all for, you know, in a sense, we're all immigrants at some point, right? I know our family we're not Native American. We weren't born in America.
We have all kinds of stuff.
As far as our lineage, yeah.
We do have Native American. There's quite a bit.
Yeah, Grandma had a bunch.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. Actually, Grandpa, too.
In the scheme of things, it's still a pretty small
percentage. But see, our family, though, was not wealthy. Like, we came up, our whole family has been working, like, work our tail off people.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have money to own slaves. We didn't have money to do any of that. We were the guys who were working in the field and, like, all that kind of, or being craftsmen and stuff like that. That's what our whole family was.
Yeah. But I think my point was, though, at some point, our family was immigrants. I have no problem with immigrants. My only problem is when you start giving them more things than you give your own people. And I think they give too much sometimes to us. Like, as far as when you start looking at Social Security, but when you start looking at people on welfare and just those whole programs and how easy it is to get away with things. It's Dave Ramsey, who I like Dave Ramsey. I think he's got a lot of good things to say. I've worked with Dave Ramsey a few times. Really nice guy.
Yeah.
But I distinctly remember him doing a whole episode, and somebody called in on welfare, and they were asking him for ways that they could get off of welfare. The problem was how expensive childcare was, right? They had like 4 kids. So they started going over, these are the kind of jobs I can get, this is how much I could make, but childcare is this much money, how am I supposed to get off welfare, right? And he had somebody call in who had like 6 kids, right? Whew. And this person was like, so if I made this much, and by the time I retired, I would make this amount of money. But if I just stay on welfare, I'll make 1.5 times that. So why should I go get a job? And they were mad because he was suggesting they should go work because they're able-bodied, because they said they had no disability. The only thing was they had no job and a bunch of kids. And they didn't, and so they were like, "Well, why should I work? I get all this free money."
But I mean, the it's incentivizing the wrong, added the wrong kind of ethic.
Yeah,
that's really what you need. I'm for helping people. My problem is that I think that the way we socialize a lot of stuff, that I don't have my own money is so tied up in the taxes upon taxes upon taxes upon taxes, and I'm not a rich man. I do well, but like I'm limited to what I can help other people with because of these other social programs that don't work that get in there.
It's even worse when you're self-employed. Ugh,
it's terrible.
I've been self-employed for I don't know how many years now. I've been doing
over a decade, right?
Oh yeah, I mean it's been well. I've had some sort of self-employment for 23 years almost, and you get taxed higher when you're self-employed. You pay more tax.
You do.
Because there's a self-employment tax. So it's like, why would I want to be an entrepreneur and self-employed when you're going to charge me extra taxes because of it?
Well, I know that, like you were saying, people with kids, like I have there's a friend of mine, and they have a special needs kid, right? The insurance alone is $4,000 a month,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So but they're on assistance. So they can't make more than, I forgot what number it was. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even that much, right? Mm-hmm. So you're stuck. Because that's let's say it's, well, I don't remember. Let's say it's somewhere like 20, you're allowed to make $2,500 a month. Because I think it's somewhere around there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you got a $4,000 health insurance bill on top of that, right? So if you wanted to maintain your current level of living, if you weren't on the assistance that you had, then you would need to, like, what is it? Like, you're talking like 150% increase in your, well, more than that. Three, mm-hmm. Like two or that's yeah. a huge jump to make in order to try to get it on your own. How are you going to do that?
Yeah, it's like the whole system's flawed because the system's not designed for you to be able to get out of it, right? If it was, there'd be a tiered system, right? There'd be we get you're trying to work and make more money. We're still going to help you, but it's less because you're making more, right? But it's not like that. They don't set it up for success. They set it up for you either have to stay in it or you have to get completely out of it.
Yeah. So we have a couple friends who are people we know who are running for office or have run for office or all that kind of stuff, right? I don't want to say names, but there's particularly though, I never could really support either. I shouldn't say either because there's been more than that, but there's been a few of them. And in our circle of, I guess, because we're musicians and been in that scope for a long time, most of them swing very far left.
Very far left.
Right? And so for me, it's always been a challenge, although we've played with all kinds of people. It really didn't matter when you're playing music. Music is like the thing that glues you together. And like, it really doesn't matter about politics. It really doesn't. As long as somebody doesn't like get all up in arms about anything political, your music and like just having, you know, just sharing that is really enough, which is fantastic. It's like the golden key, right? But, some of that circle, though, that has gone that way. I felt conflicted when it came to my support because I really do not ascribe to that Democrat Party anything. Because I think that even if those people don't, they have to eventually either decide to be party politics and just stick with that and support what the Democrat Party does, or they just get exiled and they're gone anyway.
Yeah. There's one particular person that I know we've played music with, and I would wholeheartedly support him going in only because I know his heart. Right. And so it's like I can, if a Democrat, in the same way Republicans, because I'm in the middle, you know what I mean? Like but either one of them, if I truly believe they have good intentions and they're not going to be a corrupt asshole, I'll totally support them because the fact that they're not a corrupt asshole makes them better than anybody else I know of, because almost all of them, you know, it's, look, downtown New Albany, right? Little town close to here. You start looking at where all the money went, right? And you start looking at the people on the council. And you start looking at the mayor. Where do they all live? Huh. Mostly the neighborhoods that are getting the new sidewalks. The neighborhoods that are getting completely redone with new landscaping paid for by the city. And then you go 10 blocks down where the sidewalks are crumbling.
Yep.
And look at the kind of houses that are there. The sidewalks are still owned by the city. But why aren't those crumbling sidewalks getting fixed? Why is it Mansion Row, which they call Mansion Row very specifically, why is it the place getting all the remodeling on the street? And so you start going, huh. Or I know one big thing of contention was a big water park. And there was a lot of bids on it, and there was a lot of local bids. The people who got the bids, there was supposedly ties to council members, and they were not local.
I mean, I think that's the key, though. We got to get away from crony anything.
To me, really. I think once you become a politician, and it's like a full-time thing. I mean, the auditing should be pretty heavy, man. Like,
well, see, I kind of understand why it used to be a part-time gig.
It should be people representing people. It shouldn't be politicians who've never worked a job in their life representing people.
Right? No.
You look at Obama's a really good example of this, right? Of going in with his only real job was like a community organizer,
which is politics.
I think he was like a consultant at a university or something, wasn't he, or something?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
It's kind of sketchy.
Yeah, it's sketchy. Anyway, my big point on that, though, was look at how many multi-million-dollar mansions the guy bought while he was president and leaving presidency. And he wasn't one of the really wealthy people when he went in.
No.
Right? So you start looking at, okay, what's a president's salary? How much can they afford? Okay, why do they now own? It's like four big estates, if you include the one in Chicago, which was pretty big, but all the other ones are way bigger.
Yeah.
Right. So you say, well, where's all that money come from? Especially if they can't play stocks. So what are they doing?
Well, I know that it's the same thing with, like, there's a bunch of them, dude.
Every single one.
Oh, yeah.
He's just an example. I'm not saying he's worse than anybody else.
No.
But that's just the most, you know what I mean? You can go back to literally every president that we've had in the past 30, 40 years and look at how much their net worth has grown in the period of being a president. And it's not just from public speaking.
Except Reagan. I think Reagan was the last like statesman we had.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he did. And I'll have to, somebody would have to fact check me on this one. Yeah. But I think he was kind of like the last of the true breed. Now, there was others. Like, both George Bushes were so connected with God knows all kinds of stuff. That's a no brainer whether or not they did something.
They were big in oil.
And speaking of characters, we talked about this in the last episode. You talked about how politicians are kind of, they are characters anymore. Eric Weinstein said the same thing when he was in an interview. We were watching him, and because the interview was talking about how Kamala Harris is she kind of intelligent or whatever? And Eric said, I would really hesitate to judge her intelligence or even her sophistication or whatever, because it's a character.
Character.
It's Trump very much a character. She says the same thing over and over again so as to not say a lie out in the open or whatever that can't be. They hide all that stuff behind all this rhetoric that they are. Trump's the opposite. He just says stuff, you know.
But that's his character. But that is part of his character.
Part of, yep.
The social media, like, Trump probably would have got voted back in if he would have shut up, right?
Oh, that's true.
But that's his character. His character is to be loud. It's to be somewhat obnoxious. That's his shtick, right? And so I know people who have been like, you know, Trump's not in this for anything because he's, you know, he refused to take a paycheck while he was in office. And I'm like, yeah, but Trump's brand, the brand name of Trump, I'd like to go see how much that increased in value over the course of him being a president.
Talk about
something. It was a ridiculous amount.
Talk about something way more worth more.
Oh, than, yeah.
You know,
yeah, everybody knows the presidents don't become presidents because of the salary, right? Do I like that he didn't take the salary? Sure. Yeah, that's cool, right? but to me, like, none of them should get paid until they balance the budget.
Well.
So, I mean, that's just the way I have to. And it shouldn't be they shut down. They shouldn't shut down the White House and in the government. They should still have to work.
Like when I see let's get away from that for a little bit. So
I can go on all night.
I know. Well, me and Brian never have politics as like a subject matter we talk about.
Yeah, it's always something else.
It just always
it comes out.
Yeah.
Well, it's a hot topic.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. And you hear this a lot about, well, I don't really care. That's all this stuff. But I think that I wouldn't say especially, but I think as a Christian who has real strong beliefs and really has like a want to be involved in caring with the community and stuff, I think it's just important to be aware and kind of even understand things. But I think that a lot of people don't take the time to look at issues like they should. And this is kind of what, so me and Brian's last episode was about, we were talking and leading into what is truth, and like there's another thing to introduce. So that's going to be next time, but it does kind of coincide with this whole thing, Rob. There's like a theory that this guy named Don Hawkins put out. This is ages ago, and he called it the nine veils. It started out as eight, then they refined it with some mathematics, and it's like it's really about like these. Why can't people see the truth? And it's like how there's these different levels of, like, I guess you'd call it awareness or consciousness that people just can't get through. It takes them to break through that veil in order to see a next level of awareness or consciousness. Here's an example. Like the very first level of the very first veil is really about you are consumed with just surviving. That's all you can really see is clothing and food and all that. That's it. There's nothing. You don't see past that veil, right? So anything like about politics or even sports teams and stuff like that, you really can't pierce. You can't understand it. You can't see it. You won't accept it because you're so consumed with that first level, right?
Right.
So we'll talk about this later, but it kind of goes to these nine veils. But it makes sense when you talk about looking at, and this is why I'm asking you this. It just, like, when you look at around in our community, man, I I've talked to people. I want to ask you this. If you've talked to people locally, do you get a sense that anybody takes more time at all to research any issues or factual things that are being talked about really in the news and stuff?
Like, I think I know a few people that do. Yeah. And I very pointedly make sure that I read their post when I see them on social media. Cause I'm like, I know this person. I know they're actually going to like research things rather than just regurgitate. Right. But about 90% of people right now, I think, are just, they read headlines too. That's the other thing I can't stand too. Here's a really good example, right? So I watch a lot of Formula One, and Formula One lately has gotten to where these huge sensational headlines, hugely sensational. And you go to read the article and it's totally different, right? And the, you know, they'll be like, what was the one I read today? Major FIA announce Lewis Hamilton should have been an eight-time world champion. And I'm like, hold up here. What? And it's like people shocked. And I go to read it and it's like, former team principal Gunther Steiner said that he thinks Lewis Hamilton should have been an eight-time world champion. I'm like, that's totally different than saying the FIA, which is the controlling body of Formula One, announces he's an eight-time world champion, right? So that's like, but that's what news articles are doing now. You know, they're like, major discovery in the Atlantic Ocean. And then you go to read it and it's like, fishing boat found fishing. And you're just exactly. Like, and you, but then you read the comments, and it's all people going, it's so wonderful that we're still discovering new things in the Atlantic Ocean. And you're just like,
dude, it's a fishing boat.
It was a fishing boat fishing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's what news articles are doing right now. And they're doing the same thing with politics, right? And that's some of the FEMA stuff we're talking about is getting sensationalized because it's.
I didn't get that from. Well, okay, it started with a news article, not a news article. It started with a social media influencer that led me down a path that I found some stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then later I found another article that was released showing, yes, that's what they got. And then this is why. Like, it's more to the story.
Yeah.
And that's hard to find. And even that's more understandable than a lot of this other shit that you find on there, right? Because you just get so much dumb crap, and you're just like, that's not what they you know, and so that's where we're at now, though. You got people who want to, they sensationalize, and the people don't understand news is it's now entertainment and profit, right? They don't want to give you the real news because it's not clickable. They want to give you something that's sensationalized that's going to make you click, right? And even just commenting on it is considered a click. You don't actually have to click on their website and read the article. Because merely getting the comment is working towards their goal.
Yes, indeed.
Right?
Yep.
So liking a post, getting mad at a post. If you don't like a post, don't leave an emoji on it because you're just feeding what they want. Right? Your best bet is to either just, you know, delete it off your feed or don't comment. Don't click any, you know, mad buttons.
Well, that's for us. That's why we started out with this being long form because we wanted the context. I knew the views would be a very, very long, arduous climb, but, and we will eventually get to some shorts, but they won't be, I doubt if they're going to be as short as some of these other things are, but you're the whole way that people do things now is such a short attention span.
Oh, it's so small.
It just, it's mind blowing. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's crazy, dude.
It is crazy, and that's some of that's the world we live in now, right?
Yeah,
you start thinking about. Gosh, I remember growing up, everything was so laid back because, like, even going to the store, you didn't have a cell phone with you, you didn't have all this garbage with you, even the radio. Right? I was thinking about this the other day with my kid. growing up, we just had to watch what was on air, not even that. We had to watch what was on air, and we could actually get. Because you didn't know what station was going to come in that day, depending on what direction the wind blew.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So now it's like, I want to watch Thomas. I want to watch Thomas. I want to watch Thomas. You know, and you're like, okay, let's watch Thomas. You know, and I'm sitting there going, I'm really wondering what effect this is going to have when he gets, you know, I try to make him turn the TV off. And we also were like, well, we got to watch your sister's show. Or, you know, his mom is really good about making him watch stuff that she wants to watch because she gets so aggravated on stuff he wants to watch over and over. She's better at it. But I'm like, I like this stuff. You know, I mean, I'm still a kid. I'm like, yeah, I'll watch Thomas the Train. I love trains. Like, sure. And Amy's like, I can't take another Thomas the Train episode. So she's like, let's watch The Voice. Let's watch something. You know, I mean, something. And so, but I just want, you know, you have to sit back there and think, be like, yeah, I'm trying not to spoil him. But I'm also wondering what effect that's going to have. And I think a lot of that is this whole rushed mentality, right? So we don't have time for things. You know, we don't even have time to get from home to the grocery store without something coming up on our phone that's a notification we need to check by the time we get to the grocery store.
Right. Like, I know, dude. It's crazy.
So why would I want to take the time to read a whole news article?
I know, dude. Even just read. Like, it's hard to know. Like, people I think is just like, read the headline and, oh, no, I'm not reading anymore. It's like the reading is such a bad word anymore. It's like, what? Yeah. Why is that?
Well, and even that now, you know what I mean? Like, the paper used to be a common toiletry item, right? You remember, it used to always be in a bathroom by the toilet was a stand that had magazines and newspapers.
Yep.
Right?
No longer.
Now it's, let's scroll Facebook. That's some people even calling it, I'm going to go take a Facebook break. And that's what you're just going to. And then yeah, I'm guilty. I play a game or something. So, you know, I'll get out there and I'll be.
See, I know I've really tried to limit social media, dude, like a bunch. Really, the only time I look at I look at Facebook is really just when I get notifications, and there's more than four or five.
Yeah.
Then I'll just get on there. I'll check the notifications, and that's it. That's all I've been doing. That's it. Just to make sure I don't get tagged in something dumb anymore. Because, you know, there was like these really bizarre people that kept tagging me in all this like alt stuff that I was nowhere interested in. Did not want to become on a watch list from any of this nonsense. And I didn't even know these people.
Like people we've known in the past.
Yeah. All right. Well, so look,
I get it.
So one thing, Robbie, I wanted to mention to you today, man, that was especially I just graduated, right, with this apologetics degree, right? Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. Whatever.
I'm sorry.
But it occurred to me, though, when you were going to come here today, I think one of my first apologetics uses was at Mark's Feast Store in St. Matthews, before you were a Christian, really, we had a heated lunch. We had this whole conversation. And it was, I started thinking about it, dude. And I was like, holy crap. Now, we weren't being insulting or anything, but obviously we're pained. So we have this like natural, robust attitude. Yeah. But it was like, because you were saying like, well, this, and I'd be like, that doesn't say that. It doesn't mean that. And this, we went down that road for the whole, you know, it was interesting. Now, that day, it's not like you said, well, you're right, Reg, that's it. You know, that wasn't it at all. But I just remember that keenly was like, you know, that was probably the longest conversation about apologetics I had when I was that was the first experience like that, you know? And so
you're welcome.
Well, but not that particular conversation, Robbie, because I know that you were working in sound and playing bass and all that stuff. What really made you get and fully commit to following Christ at like, you know, at the time?
So, you know, there was a gentleman, his name was Matt. He was the worship leader at one of the churches and they started hiring the production company that I worked at. Right. Mm-hmm. And I've never been a non-believer.
Right.
I never didn't believe in God and all that. Right.
Well, we were turned off. Okay.
Yeah, we were turned off by
both of us. Both of us. At one point, right? Yes.
Yeah, we were turned off by the people.
Correct.
Not to the beliefs. I was going to say religion, but it's not a religion. It's a beliefs, right? Mm-hmm. Religion. I remember Kyle Eidemann had a really awesome sermon that was about how Christianity is not a religion. It's a faith. It's a way of life, right? It's a set of beliefs.
Yeah.
And he had a whole thing, and I can't explain it all because I'm very not eloquent in how I speak. But he obviously Kyle is, but no, Matt was. I mean, here I was, this rough production dude. You know, obviously done crap I'm not proud of in my life. It's currently in a relationship, living with somebody, and then. Here I am going and mixing at their church. They're paying our sound company to provide somebody. And that's not totally uncommon, but it's a little uncommon for churches sometimes to be willing to have somebody who's not a professed believer and member of the church to be any part of anything that happens there, right? Even like down to the facilities people, right? You'd be surprised how many churches are like, oh, you're not a Christian, you can't clean our bathrooms. Right. And that always bothered me, right? Because if you're so willing to have people who don't believe come in and attend and see and everything, why aren't you willing to pay some of them to come clean your bathroom? You know, whatever. And so like they were very cool. And it was something about the way they accepted me. Yeah. Right. There was never like we need to have a conversation about why you don't believe, right? They never once had that conversation with me. what they did do, and the campus pastor at the time, Mr. Brian Seitz, was absolutely amazing too, right? But actually, at the time, it was, oh, he left not too long after. Brian Seitz ended up becoming the pastor. He was a worship leader too. But anyway, so they, all of them were very much, they just cared about me. So they were exactly what I think a Christian should be. You're not supposed to hound people. You're not supposed to just hound them into saying, this is what you're supposed to believe. You don't believe this, you're wrong, right? Even though that's kind of, we understand that there's, you know, Jesus came and he gave his life and he did all this for us, right? And all this major sacrifice and there's God alone. But you can't just expect somebody to just drop everything and say it because you say it, right? And so what they did is they treated me how what I feel like Jesus treated the apostle. Jesus didn't browbeat him. Jesus didn't go up to him and say, you're an awful person, you should follow me. He didn't do that, right? He went up to him and he had conversations with him and he treated them differently than how other people treated him because he loved them right off the bat, right? He treated them with in such a such a raw, amazing love with no judgment that they had no choice but to love him back, right? And so that's kind of what happened to me. Like, these guys, Matt later died in a car wreck, which was awful, but it was awful, man, because he was one of my favorite people there. He really was. Well, there was some good people there, but he was...
Well, and it was, way after I understood which Matt you were talking about. I went to U of L with that dude.
Yeah.
Played jazz with the guy.
Yeah.
Totally didn't
amazing
even.
Amazing bass player.
Didn't even like, it didn't even, you know, it was wow.
I thought, yeah.
I didn't even think, didn't even know. I would have loved to have been at the church when he was there because.
It was awesome.
Because of great. Just me and, he was such a cool guy when we were at U of L.
Yeah.
But that was, yeah, that was cool.
But I had a conversation with him one time. And he was just like, yeah, man. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm a worship leader here and a pastor. And he's like, but, you know, I still have a band that plays out. I'm like, well, how can you justify, you know, being a band and a worship leader, but going and playing at a bar? And he explained to me, he said, well, how else are some of these people in the bar going to meet somebody who truly follows Jesus? You know, What if I'm the guy who's playing this gig? Obviously, he's not going to play dirty songs, right? But there's still plenty of dance songs you can play that aren't dirty. You know, there's tons out there. And you can go play and you can play songs and people can really enjoy you. And then you can come off stage and you can show them how to love like Jesus.
You know, it's funny you said you bring this up because I think this is one of the topics I've had many conversations about. And I think this is a part of a problem with the evangelical movement. And it goes into this is like, because of this supernatural, like almost Lord of the Rings type of extravagant outward display of the spirit that you have to like, okay, everybody needs to be this like Bible beating, you know, Holy Spirit, fire breathing person, you know, in order to create this. You know, it's all that. That's what brings that attitude in of exclusion and all that stuff, right? And even our dad, I'd had a lot of conversation with dad about this, and he would kind of lean to that way where
fire and brimstone.
Oh yeah, you gotta be a believer if you're gonna get up there and play and call him in and it was all this stuff, and it's so okay, almost say stupid, but it's just ignorant.
It's single-minded.
It's short-sighted,
right? I think it's short-sighted. Short-sighted is a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Because that's why it all comes down to, it's man, even while when I was a contractor, before I got baptized, before I ended up becoming a member of the church and even started working at the church for a while, they had me on stage to play bass. And actually now that same church, that can't happen. And while I do understand it a little bit, I also kind of hate it. You know what I mean?
And I would agree.
Yeah.
Now I would say that being a permanent member of the worship team
different
requires something else.
It's different. Yeah. It's different than having a hired gun.
Yes.
And you hire a professional to come in and do something. And in this case, it was just a last minute. Somebody, you know, bass player got sick and Matt knew I was bass player. And he said, "Hey Rob, instead of paying you to run sound, can I pay you to play bass?" I was like, "Sure."
But your experience there echoes mine at Encounter Church when I first got there. So they had me playing. I wasn't. It was same way with you. Like, I believed in a God. I was, you know, that kind of thing. Had just gone through all kinds of cycles of, because we were both raised Christian, dude. I mean, we were both there, but I don't know. I was all over the place with like Taoism and everything else. But like, if Encounter Church wouldn't have,
we don't talk about those years. There's a certain amount of years there of you that I think we just kind of forget,
dude. In
Bead Reggie,
I can't forget him because it
angry Reggie.
Oh, dude.
Andrew, was that when you were on Andrew Steen?
Yeah,
you
know,
same thing Mark McGuire used.
Yeah, that was. I mean, because it was all
basically steroids.
Dude, I was cranked up, dude. Cranked up,
hauling shredded paper.
But anyway, going back to this,
you're a badass back then. Like, you were like buff.
I know, but that was all consuming, man. You know what I'm saying? That was all consuming. It was gym and
y'all don't understand this. Reggie used to be stacked.
Gym, he's, martial arts.
He's not. And stuff. He wasn't just fat. I used to be stacked. Most people don't
remember. I'm doing pretty good now, though, man. The last few months doing.
Oh yeah, doing your.
Oh yeah, I mean it's
your axe workout, your lumberjack workout.
Oh yeah, man, it's been really cool.
I need to start doing that again. I used to have bigger arms.
Yeah, they're getting back. They're getting back there. But you know what the problem is now is like I gotta watch because it's such a brutal activity. It can really hurt you. Like, you can really hurt.
So yeah, you go overboard.
Well, and you know, picking up big old wood rounds, you know, and lifting them around. Well, you got to be careful because those are really heavy and you're carrying them at your.
And you have to pick them up a specific way because the way they roll out of you, it's not like you can use really well.
No.
You know, well trained pickup technique.
Anyway, so getting back to it. But
yeah, so Encounter
Church, man, I mean, they had me come in and they were like, oh, you're a drummer. We need, you know, you want to come in and play. But I never would have. I never would, probably wouldn't have took that initial apologetics journey I went down in order to like intellectually sort out the Christian faith if that would have happened. Yeah. I don't think that, and it was because a church said, hey, just come in. Well, you know, in this.
See, to me, that's loving like Jesus.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what Christianity is about, right? When you look in the Bible, right, Jesus even says the most important commandment is to love thy neighbor like you love yourself, right? And it's like, that becomes all encompassing me, right? Because so many people focus on all this other stuff. It's all this other stuff, right? But then when you look at it, Jesus said the most important thing is to love each other.
Yeah, like he says, like, love God and his before everybody else. Love your neighbor.
Yep, that's the most important thing. Love God, love everybody else.
And then you go, and also in prayer, people don't understand about prayer. Like one thing that Jesus was, and really the whole New Testament is about prayer, was like thanksgiving is the number one thing. And it's noted more than anything else is to pray about is thanksgiving.
Don't get me started on prayer, man.
I know. Okay. Anyway, so.
Man, the one thing I can't stand is long-winded prayers. I get so upset because, you know, like, and I get sometimes prayer needs to be long-winded because sometimes just depends on what you're praying about, right? If you're in a moment of great, great hurt, you're probably going to have a longer prayer because you're more, almost more or less having a conversation, right? But I don't know. So many times I get roped into these like 10, 15 minute prayers lately, and I've just kind of.
Well, like, dude, I think it becomes. Sometimes I think you take the genuine nature out of it when you set like it's got to be this long prayer. I think then you start really trying. You start getting into this. What can I say at this point? Now, not all the time. I think there's some points. So I know. Oh, you know, there's been some points when I've prayed for probably quite a while in a public for something else or whatever.
There's moments for it, right?
But when you, I guess what I stop is like, I don't care how long somebody says they want me to pray. If it doesn't seem genuine, I'm not going to do it. I mean, because that defeats the whole purpose.
So that used to be my thing when I worked at, you know, the mega church, and there were so many people that worked there that were career Christians. They grew up in a Christian house. They went to a Christian college. They came straight out of a Christian college to get a job in a Christian place, or, you know, a Christian church, and that's all they've done. And when you heard them pray,
there was a formula.
Yeah. There's a formula to it, you know what I mean? And you just kind of, and not that I didn't think they meant what they said, right? Because some of the best people I know were from this church, right? But also some of the most fake people I know from this church, you know? And that's just, and unfortunately that's churches in general, but I've always had an issue. Good for somebody for growing up Christian, being able to go to Christian college and then going straight into a Christian ministry, and that's what they want to do. But I always kind of feel like when they get out of the Christian college, they should be forced to go work a normal job for 3 or 4 years before they go in the ministry, because it's kind of hard to mentor and counsel people, because what I found is the biggest part of church is everybody there is broken, right? So you got, what happened was you'd have these staff people who lived this Christian life their whole life. And yeah, everybody's sinners, right? But it's just different, right? But then you had all these congregational members who, they were drug dealers, or they were, you know, strippers or porn addicts and all this. And that, everybody sins, right? And the Bible never, you know, it never directly says there's one sin worse than the other, except when it's talking about, like, what is it, murder?
No, I mean,
and even then it doesn't really say it's worse than the other ones,
their sexual sin is
sexual sins. You know, they talk about it in a different,
he uses,
it's different terminology,
truly, or
yeah,
like he's really emphatic about it or something. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. So it never directly says this is worse than that, but the way they talk about it's a little differently. Right. But you know, you're dealing with, for the most part, you're dealing with people who are all fall into the same thing, right? They've been adulterers, they've been liars, they've been thieves, they've been drug dealers, they've been, you know, just shitty people in general, or maybe they were a shitty parent, maybe they were a shitty sibling, you know, just in general, you know, you just get what you get. And those people came to church to find something to heal them, because they were desperate, right? Those are the people in and, you know, the Bible talks about when you're at your lowest is when you're the closest. Yeah. And so sometimes those people you envy, because they're like, man, like they, and oftentimes, like I've seen this, there's a country singer friend of ours, and we know her husband real well too, right? They're so close to God. And it's because they were broken, and she'll talk about it. She was very broken. Come to church, and it hits different, man. It hits different. It's kind of, it's so weird, and it's hard to say that Jesus can hit differently when you're like that, but it does. Because it's like, if you're starving for 5 days, a peanut butter sandwich is totally different than when you've had a fresh meal and somebody offers you one, right? And yeah. So those people were starving, craving, desperate. Their lives were done. They're ready to give everything up. They're ready to commit suicide, all this stuff. And they come in and they find Jesus, and Jesus changes their life. The way you look at Christianity is totally different when that happens, right? And so I've always had it's not an issue, right? But I always felt bad, because like, if you had somebody who grew up in a Christian house, the Christian family, and they were always a Christian, always went to church, and then they went to even Christian private school, and then they go to a Christian college, and then they go straight into a Christian, they can't relate.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's, not that their sin is not as bad, but societally, they're considered not as bad.
Yeah. I mean, I would relate that directly to a conversation I had with church leadership about who should be church leadership.
Yeah.
Because what I said was like, look, you can be as young as you can be 18 years old and like know your stuff. The gospel's, you know, you can speak pretty well, whatever. But if you're not, if you haven't been a dad yet, if you haven't grown up and worked and like had to pay for your, like provide for your family and be responsible for some other stuff, you really aren't going to relate to people who are like in their 50s or 60s or even in their 30s, working a dead end, like, you know, trying to take that person. And then you're going to try to relate to somebody who's maybe they're in their 30s, been working in construction all their life, struggling. The only thing they like to do is grab a case of whatever cheapest beer it is and chug it down. I mean, your job to communicate to those people is drastically different than it is for even me or you, because we've been done some really dumb things. We've in the secular world, we've done, I mean, it's such a different story that you can actually relate to and feel, right? Your empathy towards that person changes dramatically because you're like, you so relate to those people.
Makes you say something different. Like you get different advice, right? It's like, but there's a middle ground, right? So I've always had an issue when it's only elders in a church have any authority.
True. Right?
Because at some point, you're old enough that you can't relate to what the newest problems are. So it takes a village, blah, blah, blah. But you got to have a good mix, right, to an extent. But that's why there's youth pastors. That's why there's, you know, different levels of pastors for different generations, the different people in different stages of life. And it's weird when you see a very young campus pastor, because you kind of, and I know the campus pastor you're probably talking about, and I love him to death. He's a fantastic person.
No, I want. Oh no,
you talking about someone else?
No, no.
Okay,
I don't know. I know that. I love him, by the way.
Yes, awesome.
Love that guy to death, and I wouldn't say where he's at. With things, because I've never talked to him in general to like, no, just real brief, been a great guy kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't throw that and put that on him. To be fair, there, there's been other cases. So I'll say that. Okay.
Yeah. There's plenty of cases. Yes. But yes, I know exactly what you mean. And that's, you know, and that goes along with what I said. I don't think a pastor has to be somebody who's, you know, killed somebody in war or, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be somebody
preacher, baby.
But it has to be somebody who can understand the concepts.
Yeah.
Right. And that's totally different. And me at 42, you know, I'm middle-aged, but I understand way more stuff than I did when I was 32.
Well, yeah. In our 40s, Robbie, I think that's what the thing is. We've gone through a lot of things in our life. I mean, the life experience we have is vastly different than when either of us were at 25, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and even then we're supposed to be adults, but I think both of us would say we were such morons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And did so many stupid things, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I guess where I was going with it is that, you know, the idea that somebody goes around and doesn't really experience much outside of a strictly the confines of a Christian organization does have much harder
they have for a them. Disadvantage when dealing with the average congregational member.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that's where, look, so when we talk about when one of the things I actually spoke about to the mega church leadership was like my contention with how they broke up services and did all this. Cause what you had was, most of the senior citizens were coming to the first service, and then all your families and like your younger people were coming to the second service. That doesn't pull the total body together, because you need the old to inspire wisdom for the young. You need the young to energize the old.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the way it's supposed to really work. So you have this pool of different life experiences that can speak as a body much more diverse than either one on their own, you know.
Now, I will say the church I mix at now, Believers Christian Church, they do two services, and it very much is not segregated like that. Like the there's definitely older people in the first one, but there's also a lot of older people in the second one. Because I think part of that was just that church, right? So that church just had a, it was a very cliquey church. And I think it just happens sometimes in mega churches. A lot of people will say mega churches are the devil, blah, blah, blah.
No.
I still don't see that. I see a mega church is way harder to keep on the line that it should be than a small church, right? Accountability is way harder. And the problem I had with the mega church was there was so much stuff that while you had to start running it more like a business in some senses, right? That people would they would either go way too far business or they would go way too far Christian church, right? So you would be like, well, why does this person still have a job when they're not doing their job and they're not showing up to work and taking advantage basically of the paycheck? And you talk to them about it and they still just kind of refuse to do their job. And that's where they're like, well, yeah, we're Christian. We hate the firearm. And you're just kind of, okay, I get it. But on the other hand, that's not good steward of the money that we're being given, right? But then you'll have this other person who's like totally takes the Christian aspect out of it 100%. And they're just like, well, I was hired to do this. And this is and meh. And you're just kind of like, you know, there's a middle ground, right? And that gets really hard, especially in a mega church when you're talking, God, when I was there, there was 500 employees. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 500 employees. And there's certain positions that needed to be more corporate. And the problem was those were the positions they were not hiring people to be like that. You know, so when you get like an HR person who's not a very experienced HR person because they're just trying to hire a Christian to be in the role rather than somebody qualified in HR, that causes issues, right?
One last thing before we go here, Robbie. So yeah. One thing that we've done here on this
you only get one more.
One more.
I'm not being paid for anything more than one.
Well, one thing we do here is we do talk about masculinity and being men a lot, but obviously it's the very center of what we do here.
Good topic. Obviously, I'm very manly.
Well, I mean, come on.
I mean, I forgot my overall. And my pipe, apparently.
You did.
In my cool hat. And my moccasins.
I know.
And I got boat shoes.
You do. But I mean, do you see that masculinity has been attacked in this culture and is trying to be suppressed kind of in an overall way, and it's deliberate?
I think it did for a while. I think it's gotten better in some ways, right? I see less about it now, right? There for a bit, it was always about toxic masculinity. You know, I think that's tamed down a bit because people started realizing, hey, you know, we don't like the guys when they're, you know, total pansies. Like, but I mean, toxic masculinity to me is the guy at the gym who's does nothing but upper arm workouts, drinking his gallon jug of water, and his legs are this big around because the only thing he does is bench press and curls, right? So toxic masculinity is, I think the problem was that it got spit out there to say, well, something's manly. That's toxic, but that's totally off the thing, right? Right? Because if something's feminine, that used to be a good thing. Femininity used to be a good thing, right? And that's kind of taking a back seat too. So there's this balance, right? So you start seeing, it's weird because you started getting a whole group of women who wanted to be more manly, but they couldn't call it that because that's toxic masculinity. And then you had a group of men, but it seemed to be okay for them to be one more feminine, and nobody had a problem with that. Now, I think it's evened out a little bit, but to me, toxic masculinity is still definitely a thing, right? But the problem is the people that seem to be championing masculinity are not people I really want to represent. how I think a man should be.
I think there's a lot of more people that do represent that aspect of masculinity well.
You just don't see them because they're not in the forefront of the media.
I do. I mean, like, Nick Friedis is one who I find to be, like, a really good masculine role model.
What was that?
You know, guys like Sean Ryan and Joe Rogan, I would say, you know, those guys are doing things.
Joe Rogan, though.
I'm going to say I agree with everything. I mean, obviously, but I mean.
He's just a little too loud for me.
He's loud.
You know what I mean? He's a little too on the toxic side of the masculinity. He has a lot of good things, but he can be over the top, but that's his character, right? What was the name of the CrossFit guy that won like the CrossFit championships like 4 years in a row?
Well, I don't know.
Rich something. He actually came and spoke at the church. Now, here's a guy who his job is CrossFit, right? He's going out and he's working out in his garage like 9 hours a day, right? Here's a guy who I would look at and go, that's a freaking masculine dude right there, man. Like he's stacked. He's super cool. He does all this stuff. He bikes and does all this really cool stuff, but he never felt toxic. Never at one point. I think toxic becomes when you hold it over anybody, right? Like, I'm better than you because I'm masculine.
I think that I think there is no such thing as toxic masculinity, for one.
Well, that's why I'm trying to say that the toxic masculinity is really just toxic. It's only masculinity because it's, you know, some jockhead moron.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it would just be like poor manners.
Or it's like people who mansplain.
Yeah.
Mansplaining's dumb.
But even mansplaining is just a stupid word to describe something that's, I think it's kind of silly.
Yeah, I mean, we call it mansplaining because it's when you're explaining something obvious to somebody with the assumption that they don't understand, which unfortunately I think men tend to do more, in my experience.
I think it's important, though.
It's kind of like a woman going, Reggie, a period is that time of the month. When, you know what I mean?
It's like, but you don't hear somebody saying femsplaining, though, bro. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of, it goes both ways. You know, like, especially in corporate America, dude, this is a constant thing where it's all the time some kind of splaining going on, right? It ain't just man or femme or whatever. It's just
explaining.
It's just somebody trying to treat you like a child
Let's be real, Rich. Corporate America is just different.
Bro.
Corporate America, I work in corporate America too, man. And there's goods and bads, right? Because there's... It feels like there's times that accountability is great, but then there's other times where as long as you can explain away the accountability, you're fine. That's my biggest thing. If you can kiss enough butt in corporate America, you're good. Doesn't matter what your job performance is. And I see this on a daily basis almost, where you're just like, this person is screwed up so much and they really shouldn't be in their job position. Why are they in their job? Well, because their boss likes them. Why does their boss like them? You know, it's like,
yeah,
but yes. Yeah. Corporate's totally different, man.
All right. Well, so Robbie's going to join us hopefully
occasionally,
to help us with production and be like a third voice of interjection and comic relief.
Yeah. Make sure and like, subscribe, and if a comment or review is applicable, let Reggie know. If you hate me, like me. I mean, I don't really care if you like me or not, but obviously if you don't like me, I might not be on the show.
Probably. Like it. But yeah, so
my happiness does not depend on that camera.
But pray for Brian. Like you said, they're going through some stuff that's not cool, but... he will be back soon, and we'll get back at it.
We hope so.
He's
much prettier on camera than I am.
This is R&B Talks. Special guest, Robbie. Until next time. See you later.